The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home, your world is limitless. The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Switching broadband needn't be a hassle with Sky's dedicated Switch Squad.
It's 9:30. Thank you for those texts on 51551 and emails on ryan@rte.ie. We will return to them in due course. But I want to say good morning to Wendy Moxley. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
It's very, very nice to talk to you. How are you keeping?
And you? Thank you. Yeah, good. Very good. Thank you.
You did something rather altruistic and very generous during lockdown. And
Yeah, I did a bit of a mad thing. All right.
You sure did. I like the name of it, Head to Head.
Yeah, deliberately chosen.
Tell me about it.
Well, I was due to go back to work, but things transpired that I couldn't.
Sure.
They couldn't take us back on, so I decided I needed to do something that was worth doing. We had heard the statistics coming out on the radio about women in relationships that were less than perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Just going off the rails completely during lockdown.
Yeah.
And I thought, I have to do something. I knew what that was like. Well, I knew what it was like to live in that.
Yeah.
I wasn't a victim myself, but I knew what it was like to live in that terror. So I decided to take up, you know, everybody else was walking during lockdown, so I just took it a step further and walked the length of the country.
How many miles did you cover in the end, Wendy?
Miles, I don't know. About 610 kilometres.
Or kilometres, I should have said, yeah. That's amazing.
We've gone mad.
So head to head, Millen to Mizzen. Malin to Mizzen.
Malin to Mizzen, yeah.
It took you how long?
18 days and 18 Ordnance Survey maps.
Congratulations. And how much did you raise for Women's Aid?
So far, about 7,600.
Wow. What was your hope?
3,000.
Well, that's tremendous. Congratulations. Yeah, that's just, I just love hearing that, because people have their own things going on and, you know, financial concerns. And yeah, you just mentioned Women's Aid and during the COVID particularly, and just, it's worth the statistic that the free phone line has had about a 40% increase.
That's right, yeah.
And the website has had a nearly 75% increase.
Yeah.
That tells its own story, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? And about 25% increase to Gardaí. So
yeah,
it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
I want you to bring us back to the pub in Cork that you grew up above.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I want you to tell me, if you wouldn't mind, what age you were when you realised your parents' relationship was far from ideal.
I couldn't actually tell you what age I was. It was always there. Mm-hmm. It was always chaotic. You know, when my father walked into the house, you were walking on eggshells. You know, it was terrifying. You never knew. He was an alcoholic and a violent one. And so you never knew what was coming through the door. I mean, he could be great crack, but he could be vicious. He was kind of like a street angel, house devil. And you didn't know which one of those was going to come through the door. So I don't know what age I was when I realised he was dead when I was going on for 10.
Mm.
He died very young. So that threat was always in the house. You know, he could kick off at any stage and you could hear the screams, the roaring, the beating at any time. I just remember one incident where he was locked out. It was small hours of the morning, I presume, we were all in bed asleep. And as I said, we lived above the pub, so he got a ladder up to the window of the room that I was sleeping in, and I was sleeping beside the window. And I heard knocking on the window, and I didn't know what it was. You know, at first I thought it was a bird, like a big crow or something. And I opened the curtain, and he was there, sort of saying, "Let me in, Wendy, let me in, come on, go. Just open the window, there's a good girl." And initially I kind of was terrified, said no, no, no. And eventually, of course, he got around me and I opened the window and let him in. And then followed by screaming, crying, beating. It was terrifying. And then the guilt for doing that. And it still haunts me.
When you're that young and you hear those sounds, and I'm conscious that people will be who went through that same situation as you did will be remembering this morning. So I hope they're okay.
Sure.
Could you try to put me in the mind of the youngster that you were then, listening to that through the walls? What do you hear and how do you feel?
I was about 7 or 8, I'd say, about that stage. But it was always going on. But at that particular incident, kind of pat you on the head when you came through the window, and then that is then immediately followed by the sounds of my mother screaming and the sounds of thuds, of her being beaten. So, and that guilt, that never leaves you.
Can you explain the guilt to me, please? What were you feeling guilty of or for?
And allowing him in, and allowing that to happen. And I know it's not. I know intelligently it's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
But inside you just feel as though if I hadn't let him in, that wouldn't have happened.
Can I ask you what state was your mother in the next day, physically and emotionally?
What was she? She'd hit it. She always hit it. She would wear, even in the height of summer, she would wear long sleeves or something, or she would hide it. And she wouldn't say anything. There was never any discussions. She got up and we had a pub, so she ran the business as best she could and just carried on. Nothing was ever said.
Was he careful about where he inflicted the thumping?
No. Nah.
Really?
No. She wore a lot of makeup. And I think it was just, it was blind temper, I think, that I don't think he was careful about where. He would kick a chair from under and she landed on the Aga spike one time and made a big hole in her back. But I don't think it was premeditated. It was just vision.
Kicking a chair from under somebody as a husband to a wife in front of the kids is, I don't know why it turns my stomach so much. I think it's the humiliation of it as an image, as well as the practical physical cruelty of it. That's something that you remember clearly.
Yeah. Just there was always the shout, and his mother lived with us as well. And I remember her and my mother both kind of trying to calm him. They'd be arguing out on the landing when we were supposedly in bed asleep, trying to calm him down and trying to coax him, but that didn't always work.
Tell me a little... Go ahead.
He'd go off for days, you wouldn't see him for days, and then he'd come back and the car would be crashed, or... he would often not be there, so that was fine. But when he came back is when it just all went weird.
And it was this constant emotional lottery as to which numbers pick when he came through the door. Did you get the win or the lose? Was it mostly a lose?
He could be good fun. He could easily have had kind of an underlying psychiatric problem, for all we know, which is masked by alcohol or caused by, who knows, chicken and egg. But you never knew. You never knew which one came in. Was it the street angel or the house devil that came in that door?
Did you love him or hate him?
I think I loved him. When he died, I remember I wasn't at home. I was brought to school and told by a nun at school. I wonder he didn't like, actually. But anyway, and I remember I was thinking, I'm supposed to cry now. My father's dead. I'm supposed to cry. But I didn't feel like crying. Which was kind of odd.
Have you cried since about him?
I'm not sure if you could say I cried. I've certainly cried, but I'm not sure if it was because I missed him or because of what he had done. Or I suppose I have, yeah.
And as an adult now, how do you assess your father as a person?
Oh, cruel, nasty. Yeah, he needed help. And I suppose my mother certainly needed help. You know, she was battered. She was running a business. She had four kids. You know, it was hard going.
Can I ask you about conspiracy? And by conspiracy, I mean conspiracy of silence, whether that's neighbours, community. I don't know whether your grandmother as well. I'm not sure. And this isn't about blame, as we started our show talking about, really. It could be about societal conspiracy. Mm-hmm. How does a man, and this happens all the time, and I know it happens, violence
happens
against,
so
against men too. No, I do. I appreciate that. That's why it's so important to be talking about it. How is it that it, no matter how often we say, well, this was the 70s, it was different then. It's 2020, and as we're speaking, somebody could be getting the living daylights kicked out of them in their kitchen because the egg wasn't boiled properly.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk to me about conspiracy. Talk to me about silence.
It's shame. There's an awful lot of shame attached to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a victim, I haven't been, but I think as a victim, you just feel like, how could I have let myself in to do this? And then you're trapped.
Yeah.
And then society, as you say, kind of can not so much conspire, but don't know how to deal with it, because if they approach it, it could make things 100 times worse for the victim. And the victim is afraid to do anything about it because it could make things 100 times worse. And often there isn't an outlet. You know, there isn't a way out. In my mother's case, I suppose, it was because he owned everything and church and society were just against breakups in any case, no matter what, for what reason.
He had control, didn't he? And he controlled
complete control.
The household.
Complete control.
Yeah.
And she had four kids. Where do you go?
Do you have any warm memories of your dad?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. I mean, sometimes he'd come in and just play with you, or, you know, I don't know if you know where you catch a child's two hands and kind of swing them between your legs and those kind of things. Just playful like that. Shortly before he died, he took me for a spin on my own. This had never happened. He brought me out for the day and he died close to Christmas, so the Christmas annuals were out. So he bought me a Beano annual or something like that, and we went out for the day, which was very strange.
But you were happy.
Didn't feel normal.
You were happy in that moment, by the sounds of it.
It was nice to have been kind of brought out on my own with him, kind of having that time, but it just felt very strange. I felt uncomfortable.
Because kindness was alien to you from your father?
Yeah, and being with him on my own was completely alien.
There were four of you, you say, four siblings. Was it discussed or was it the great unmentioned?
Oh, it was very much the great unmentioned.
Really?
Yeah.
So even with the thuds and the bangs and the screaming?
Even among us. Yeah, no, never talked about it. And I even didn't know the detail of it till I was an adult.
And is it the subject of discussion over coffee, not now necessarily, but as an older person, as you got older, did you sit down together and say, Jesus, lads, that was not good?
No.
No,
probably
really?
We would have kind of said, not so much sat down over coffee and had a discussion about it at all, but you'd say, oh, remember this. Oh, Christ, I was mad. But, you know, you do something daft and or crazy or... that an incident might be mentioned, but not a whole conversation about.
How old was your dad when he died?
41.
And how did he die?
Massive heart attack. That was alcohol related, I imagine.
Okay. And you said you didn't go to the funeral. You weren't brought to your funeral. You were told.
No,
You were told by a nun. You said that
school. Yeah.
You mentioned, and I slightly misheard you. Did you say a nun he didn't like or you didn't like?
No, I didn't like.
You didn't like the nun in question. Okay, well, that's all right. That's between you and the nun, in some regards. But Wendy, tell me then at the age of 9, do you still feel? Because I think at kind of 7, 8, 9, kids are much more cognizant of what's happening around them than they get credit for. So let me ask you: would you have preferred to have gone to that funeral?
Absolutely.
Really? All these years later.
Absolutely.
Why?
I felt very left out. I didn't have any family member around me for a week, maybe two. I was at my godparents' house, so I just felt very alone, and not knowing, you know, my father had died. Okay, he was a so-and-so, but he was still my father. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to have been there. I'd like to have been with my family, my siblings, my mother, but they were... And I think it's very important to have, to include a child in their parents' death.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of salutary lesson for a lot of people to hear that this morning. Let me ask you more about more recent times in term. Well, no, actually, Jim, before I do, I got the sense there's a happy news story in the sense that when your father died, that ended a very, very dark chapter in your family's life. Mm-hmm. Did your mother find happiness ultimately?
She did. She married, less than 2 years later.
Great.
To a man that was a dote, an absolute dote.
Lovely.
He adored her.
Great.
So she did. Did find happiness, which was great. And Brian, my stepfather's son, is just a gem as well. He's one of our brothers. We all found happiness. I mean, we were all a bit feral, I suppose, when my father died.
Yeah, okay.
And Ray came into our lives and kind of... He was so good. He was such a good man.
I'm just very happy to hear that your mother found happiness ultimately, and that there was a sort of, I hope you don't mind me saying so, but there's kind of a sense in that, you know, that that your father dying so young allowed your mum to have that chance.
Yes, I don't know if I should say it, but I mean, because she had no way out of the situation.
Yes.
She used to say, like, he had the good grace to die young.
Okay. She's entitled to that, I think. After all,
yeah.
When you were in lockdown, I don't know if you have a family of your own now or what's your situation.
Yeah, I have three kids of my own, but they're all grown up now.
Okay. Did you find yourself thinking about the claustrophobic nature of a house?
Absolutely.
Really? Tell me about that.
Like, I'm in a very happy position of having a gorgeous partner and my son living with me, and I was just acutely aware of the fact that we were in lockdown and we were stuck. And I'm really lucky that I was in a loving position, you know, a loving atmosphere. We all like each other. But that's not the case in every home. And I was so aware of it that that's what really spurred me on to take off across the country.
Head to head. I mean, it's a carefully chosen name.
It was carefully chosen, yeah.
Because it sums it all up, I'd say.
There often is a head-to-head.
That's it. That's it, exactly. whenever we talk about this, we talk about Safe Ireland, and I was involved in a campaign some years ago. I always like to mention it because it's so important, which is the Man Up campaign, which is to get men to get it stuck into this.
I think that's so important, and it's so brilliant, because we kind of forget to take the to focus on the subject of all of this, which is the men. Mm-hmm. You know, and by their exclusion, they're kind of erased from the conversation or from the issue. You know, that really no man should treat a woman or child like that, and we need to say it. And men need to, like you said, man up with each other and sort of not accept, you know, degrading comments or harassing women. It's not okay in any shape or form.
Let me get some texts that I'd like to read to you, if you don't mind, because there's a lot of response. 51551, and if you want to donate to womensaid.ie, head there and /donate and make a contribution, because this will help. They do need it at the moment. There's a massive increase in calls, a massive increase in visits to the website, and that can only mean a massive increase in...
And the refugees are
out the door.
Bulging. Yeah.
And that is because there are men and some women who are beating the living daylights out of their partners first thing in the morning, at lunchtime, and then late into the night. And it is a sickness and a cancer in this country. that will only be allowed to thrive by silence.
Absolutely.
This woman, says the text, is right. Shame is a huge part of this. I lived with an abusive husband for 15 years. I left 5 years ago and I still feel shame at times, even though my head knows it's his shame and not mine, which is so true. Another says, this story takes me back. Brave woman telling my story, but children are beaten as well in your case and walked on eggshells. That makes my stomach, it puts me on edge, that eggshell thing about, you know what I'm talking about. The chaos, says another, and the shame. But as a child, you don't understand those emotions. It takes a lifetime to work out the damage caused by the demon that is, in this case, alcoholism. Liz says, Ryan, you carry that sadness and fear with you in adult life. I know. Listening to that lady, that is Wendy Moxley, who's our guest this morning on your show, it's bringing back very painful memories of living with an alcoholic father who was a nasty man. I still remember the fear every night going to bed, not knowing what would happen when he came home from the pub drunk and beating my poor mother up. I'm 53 now and it still affects me. Children are affected for life by living with domestic violence. Emotional and upset in Galway at the moment. And of course you are. That's why we do need to talk about this, because we need to either, one, tell people who are being domestically abused that the shame does not belong to them. It belongs to the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. Two, if you hear or see any of this, you need to make your presence felt with the relevant authorities. That's critical. And three, if you're in a position to, donate to the likes of womensaid.ie and that'll help make a difference. We had the same feeling when our mother came home from work, says another. She was just awful, a nasty woman, violent to us, her children, very controlling. Another, what I remember is the total weakness that came over my mother, total powerlessness. And that is intriguing. These women who are beautiful mothers, gorgeous sisters, and who are strong human beings, but in the face of these monsters, they crumble because of the control these people have over them. That seems to be the case, Wendy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's control.
Yeah.
Total control.
You raised €7,000. Let's try and raise a bit more if we can for Women's Aid today. It would be a nice thing to do. And we can only have done that by talking to you. So thank you, Wendy, to you, but also to your family for allowing you to talk to us. I know it's a big thing, but I think it's a desperately important thing. So thank you for making that change, for people this morning. Last word from you, Wendy, to people who are sitting at their kitchen table terrified and mortified and ashamed. What would you say to them?
Reach out, contact Women's Aid. They listen and they believe you, which is a huge thing.
That'll do nicely. Wendy, you mind yourself, and thank you kindly for your time today.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Pleasure to talk to you. Wendy Moxley joining us on the phone this morning. That helpline is 1800 341 900. That's 1800 341 900. But of course, probably as easy just to head straight to their website, womensaid.ie, and you can, as I say, make contact, make a difference, change your life, or if you want to donate, obviously that's something that will be very, very happily accepted and appreciated. And thanks for those comments today. Not easy for a lot of you to write a lot of the things you did, but hopefully Wendy's interview this morning was of some assistance to you.